Okay, I shared with you some hectic stats in relation to what the kids of the world are confronted with. I did tell you that 16 million young people from 25 countries were surveyed, and about one third of young children and teenagers with disabilities faced emotional and physical abuse, while 20% experienced neglect, and 1 in 10 sexual violence. And that's international research. And of course, that analysis involving more than 16 million young kids from 25 countries was conducted between 1990. In 2020 and published in the Lancet Child and Adolescent Health Journal, shows that 31.7% of children with disabilities have experienced violence. They're twice as likely to face neglect or sexual, physical, or mental abuse than children with no disabilities. They're also far more likely to be bullied by their peers. Just as Zui Fang from Beijing Normal University in China and the co-lead author of the research paper said, it's clear that low and middle income countries in particular face additional challenges fueled by complex social and economic drivers and must establish legal frameworks to prevent violence alongside increasing the capacity of health and social service systems to address the complex needs of children with disabilities and their families. That's in respect of disabled children. We're going to just bring the stats a little closer to home. Dr. Alicia Porter, member of the South African Society of Psychiatrists, joins us on the line. It is, of course, 16 days of activism. We understand physical and sexual abuse, and we see it often playing out in the headlines in the courts. Psychological abuse, including emotional neglect, receives less attention. Maybe we don't understand it. So, Dr. Porter, maybe we should start off there. What exactly is emotional abuse?
Hi, morning, Clarence, and thanks for having me. So emotional abuse is definitely more the invisible member of the trio when it comes to abuse, in that, you know, it's looking at, you know, words or actions that have been used to control or frighten or even isolate a child, or, you know, take away the self-respect of somebody. And the Children's Act of 2005 basically defines abuse as any form of harm or ill treatment that's deliberately inflicted on a child, which includes emotional or psychological abuse. So it includes bullying, exploitation, or exposing, or even subjecting a child to behavior that may harm them, like being exposed to domestic violence.
I shared some of the statistics a little earlier, and I said, we are animals, and somebody just sent me a message. Sorry, Clarence, animals don't abuse their young. And Carol is correct. It's surely not a human being that abuses. I mean, it's innate for us to love. What are the driving forces?
I mean, it is innate for us to love, but you have to appreciate that we are in a society or an environment where we have children who belong to families. And unfortunately, if there's been parental trauma, so you have parents who have had difficulties in their childhood. I was chatting to somebody just now who said, you know, there isn't a parenting manual. And so things like emotional abuse or psychological abuse can be perpetuated. And that's the one we don't talk about in terms of its impact. Mm. So, you know, being highly critical of children, you know, sometimes it's perceived as for their own, you know, for their own good, or being very punitive as parents, or even just wanting to be controlling, or even just the way we speak to children may actually impact them, you know, from an emotional or psychological point of view, or even just, you know, spending very little time interacting with them, or, you know, being unresponsive or dismissive. You know, life gets very busy and we get very dismissive, or giving not much positive feedback and just constantly criticizing or humiliating or cold-shouldering, or even just emotionally blackmailing children or guilt-tripping them or berating them or rejecting them. These are all features of emotional and psychological abuse. And if this happens on an ongoing basis, it definitely does put children at increased risk for mental health problems at a later stage in life. But I mean, on the other end of the spectrum, which is something that we don't even consider when we consider, you know, psychological abuse, would even be overprotection. This can be as detrimental to a child as neglect is, because children are then not allowed to develop normally, or even develop positive life skills. And, you know, that can actually also cause difficulties as they get older.
So you're saying the perpetrator has often been a victim of similar kind of tendencies, firstly. Secondly, and I need you to clarify, just overcritical and overprotective. So we may not understand what it is. Can you give us a physical example thereof?
So we're talking about emotional and psychological abuse here. So when we talk about being over critical, so it's, you know, in a household where there may be criticism about what a child is wearing, or, you know, the child got 80% and it's about why couldn't you get 90%? Why couldn't you be like your brother or your sister? Or, you know, these are sort of things that do then impact a child.
Okay.
And yeah, so when I talk about emotional or psychological abuse, it's this repeated, you know, this ongoing criticism or ongoing insult in a very negative way, but also when they are exposed to even just violence between parents or caregivers, that also has an impact and constitutes emotional abuse.
I'm chatting to Dr. Alicia Porter, board member of the South African Society of Psychiatrists, SASSOP, on the line from Johannesburg. We are talking about a third of South African children suffering emotional abuse and neglect. Now, you say it's insidious, it is hidden. You are saying it can evolve into mental health problems. Just tell us how that can manifest.
So, I mean, in terms of mental health problems, like, it can increase the possibility of anxiety and depression symptoms, also behavioral problems like disruptive behaviors, even just mood changes like aggression, agitation, sleep problems, school refusal, and even lower school performance, and sometimes even develop mental and language delays. But it's not only mental health problems. It can also be physical health, like the adverse childhood events. Right, emotional abuse is one of these adverse events that can happen. And there have been studies that have showed that there's an increased incidence of physical health problems, like, for example, asthma. And then educational outcomes are also then impacted, and so are, you know, and learning problems. And so that does then impact the overall trajectory of a child's development and their long-term outcomes, because it's a period of development that is also disrupted by the harmful effects of emotional or psychological abuse.
So the abuser was inevitably probably exposed to the same kind of situation in their young life. Children that are abused would then become the abusers, like a vicious cycle we have here. Is that correct, Doctor?
I mean, it often is, especially with emotional and psychological abuse. It can be a cycle that's perpetuated. So you would often find, you know, this intergenerational trauma being passed down from one generation, you know, to the next. So it is more probable that the person inflicting the abuse has been a victim of abuse. And so that is why it's so important in our work with children, where we don't just treat the child, we also involve the family system and the parents. And so, you know, in the unit where I work, we don't see a child without also intervening on a parental level, where we then sort of do parent counseling and teach parents, you know, some principles with regards to parenting in the hope of breaking these cycles.
So we have a situation where even exposure to family conflict and domestic violence also constitutes emotional abuse and leaves lifelong scars. But apparently, this is information, that I have. We're picking up on these cars earlier and earlier. We're seeing a third of all psychiatric disorders originating before the age of 14 and half before 18 years old. It looks like it's getting younger and younger, Doctor.
So it does. It's not that we're actually necessarily picking them up, but when we do it retrospectively, we see. So a lot of the time, you know, when adults come, we then, if we track it back, the average age, you know, in a third of these, that population would have started at about 14 and, you know, between the ages of 14 and 18 years old. And so, you know, problems in children shouldn't be ignored or just put down to it's just adolescence or it's just a phase of development. You know, when there are difficulties, they should be addressed because the long-term consequences are quite significant.
There's a duty on medical professionals and social workers to report such abuses. Are they playing their role in just stemming the tide?
Yes, because there is a, you know, there's a duty with regards to, even if there is suspected, there is duty, you know, under the Children's Act to actually report this, and there is a sort of a reporting pathway. And so, you know, within the departments where we deal with children, we have a social worker and also medical professionals who need to, they are bound, you know, to report this. And reporting happens in these instances.
Yeah, and then we need to free ourselves from the shackles of a patriarchal society that suggests that the kids are owned by us, like the wife is owned by the husband as well. I'm sure to a great extent society itself is a driver of the ghastly statistics that we've encountered today.
Definitely, because it is cultural, you know, society, the patriarchy of the society, but, you know, as we are moving on and we have Gen Z and, you know, millennials who are more vocal, and the old sort of saying that children should be seen and not heard, there's a changing tide. And so, you know, there is an increased awareness and children have become more vocal with regards to their rights. So, you know, we are seeing a change in a tide, although it is going to take a while, because we are then fighting culture and societal norms and all of those kinds of things, which take a lot longer to shift than, you know, the generation that's currently out there vocalizing their concerns.
Dr. Alicia Porter is a board member of the South African Society of Psychiatrists. We've got to wrap it up. And so emotional and psychological abuse, it happens by commission or by omission as well. That's what we heard. So it can be withholding love. So if you're cold-hearted and you don't hug your kid, you're also guilty of it. Support, rejection. We're talking about withholding love and support. Rejection, berating, threatening the child, insults, name-calling, belittling, humiliation, cold-shouldering, guilt-tripping, emotional blackmail. Your closing words, just in case you didn't know that you were an abuser as well. Now you know. Any of those things makes you an abuser as well. Closing words from you, Dr. Porter.
I mean, I think that, you know, in regards to emotional and psychological abuse, I think they are invisible scars, and I think it's about creating awareness that, you know, these behaviors are not okay, because oftentimes, you know, particularly as parents, it may be, like we said, a result of your own upbringing. But we do our best until we know better, and when we know better, then we do better.
And on that note, we'd like to thank you, Dr. Alicia Porter, again, board member of the South African Society of Psychiatrists, for bringing it home just what emotional abuse is or psychological abuse is. Often we just don't know that we are doing wrong. And sometimes it must be spelt out in the manner that she just has.